Welcome to Straight and Curly,
a podcast for self-improvement junkies.
I'm Kelly Exeter.
And I'm Carly Jacobs.
This is episode 108.
Hello and welcome to Straight and Curly. And as we always do, we're going to kick off with a review of the week. This one is from lovely Laura. I absolutely adore Kelly and Carly and have been greatly enjoying their thoughtful wisdom, brilliant life hacks and beautiful Australian accents for many months now. Their comfortable and uplifting rapport shines through in each episode and makes me feel as though I've just spent quality time with dear friends every time I listen. Gold stars all round. Isn't that nice?
Thank you, Laura. I love gold stars. And yeah, we love that people love our accent because we don't think we have an accent. So it's cool when people think that we do because that means you're from another country. Because if you're Australian, you don't notice we got an accent.
I also figured out that Americans, because I made up a J name for last week and it was Jewel and that's J-E-W-E-L. So I don't know what Americans would have heard. How would you say it? Would you say Jewel?
Jewel, maybe.
Yeah, because I kind of feel like we say Jewel and D-U-A-L like a fight in the same way. It's just Jewel and Jewel.
Someone will tell us, I have no doubt.
I'm picking up on my own things before the Americans have even come at me. It's very funny though.
We're a little bit paranoid. Okay, so on to Carly's random thing of the week. Go, Carl.
So this one is just like a funny story of me being a dick. Just one of those real eating my words moments. So Ben asked me not to throw my makeup wipe in the toilet when I'm done with it because he reckons it doesn't flush. And I mainly use reusable ones just to get my makeup off and then I wash them. They're little crocheted ones that I've made. But when I wear my hardcore lipstick, I use disposable ones because the lipstick clogs up the reusable ones and then I have to throw out the reusable ones. So that just seems stupid. So I use just like those tiny little round makeup pads and I just use one to remove my hardcore lipstick. So I use it like once a week and I'm lazy. So I chuck it in the toilet rather than the bin because the toilet's closer than the bin.
Golly.
So I just chuck it in there and it's fine. It's like smaller than a tissue. And I was just like, I'm just going to chuck it in there. And Ben's like, they don't flush. And I'm going, oh, whatever. They totally flush. So Ben was in the shower and I threw my makeup wipe in the toilet. And then when I went to the toilet later, like everything flushed except the freaking makeup wipe. And I was like, oh my God, you're kidding me. He's actually right. And then I flushed the toilet again and then it didn't go down again. And by this stage, I am in hysterics. Like I am in absolutely hysterics. So I went straight to Ben and I was like, oh my God, I am so sorry. You are 100% correct. The makeup wipes don't flush. And I just petulantly threw one in the toilet to prove you wrong. And I proved myself wrong. And now I can't stop laughing about what a dick I am. So yeah. So in my defense, I totally owned it, but I just in the bathroom, frantically flushing the toilet, trying to get this makeup wipe to go down. I was like, you know what? This wouldn't have happened if I just listened to Ben.
I'm staggered that you tried to flush a makeup wipe down the toilet.
No. It's not a makeup wipe. It's not like a pre-moistened one. It's one of the dry little round ones. I'd never flush a makeup wipe. Like, no, that's –
You would never flush a makeup wipe. You would flush a padded cotton thing.
No, but they're the really cheap little – like, they're tiny. Like, it would be no different to flushing a tissue. I am the daughter of a plumber, thank you very much. Like, I know what you can flush. Our toilet's just shit. Like, and obviously, like, the little padded things – now I know you don't fucking flush them, but I would never flush one of those like pre-moistened big towel ones. I would never do that. No.
Like the baby
ones. My father would kill me.
Good to hear.
No, I would never do that. No, the teeny little tiny.
I thought you were a functioning adult and I lost my faith in your functioning adultness for a second there. And I was like,
no, I do, but yeah, no, I definitely won't do that anymore because Ben was correct.
My recommendation of the week is listen to your boyfriend. My recommendation of the week, we were talking off air and I was saying I just could not think of a good recommendation this week because my brain is just not functioning. And you said, well, remember how at the end of last week's episode you talked about macadamia nuts? So I'm like, yeah, I'm totally going to make that recommendation this week in case you missed it last week. And someone has to, Holly, who I think might be in our Facebook group and who works a lot with the Macadamia Australia board or company. Come and tell me about it. I didn't know
that was a thing.
It's a thing. It's totally a thing. And like she totally works for Australian macadamias. And holy shit, that's so cool. And I need to know because for a while there was so my recommendation of it is macadamia nuts for snacking on because they are filling, but you don't have to have too many of them. But there's a very specific, like some macadamias are bad and the Coles brand macadamias are good. And I don't know what it is about the Coles brand versus pretty much every other brand of macadamias.
Maybe Holly can tell you where they came from at least. Yeah. So then you can know who else they're supplying to.
Yeah, and I also need to know from Holly if there was like some massive macadamia shortage towards the end of last year because I could not get macadamias anywhere for love or money. And I was like, well, what am I going to snack on now? I literally had nothing to snack on because all other nuts are dead to me now that I'm fully into macadamias. So, yeah, Holly, can you come and talk to me about macadamias? And what the
is that Holly Humphreys you're talking about?
I'm having complete mental blank on her name. I don't think it's Holly Humphreys. It's
okay, because she's the one that she comments a lot, like in a good way. Sorry, that sounded horrible. Holly Humphreys, you comment a lot and it's great and I'm very excited. Oh my God, I was like, is that the same macadamia one? That'd be amazing. Yeah, so
Holly's surname. I can't believe Holly, this is not your fault. I've been blanking on all kinds of names of people lately. People I see every day. So don't feel bad. But no, it's not Holly.
Can I just say a really random thing about Hollies? Hollies are great people. They're just awesome. Like every Holly I've ever met is like, you're awesome. And then when your friend has a friend, Holly, like, oh, have you met my friend Holly? She's great. Like Hollies are just great people. I'm just throwing that out there. I used to be a teacher, right? So I have like a hardcore prejudices against names.
Yeah.
Like it's a whole thing. It's very, very funny. Like Jacks are either brilliant or awful and there's no in between. Like there's no such thing as a boring fly under the radar Jack. They're either amazing and in your face and the greatest thing ever, or they're going to set fire to your car. I'm being dead serious. It's a whole thing. So anyway, okay. Hollies are great. Kates are great as well. Kates are brilliant. Anyway,
I know that my Holly's name ends in, her surname starts with G and I still can't remember it and I just am feeling like the worst person in the world right now. So anyway, Holly, come and tell me about macadamias in the group and confirm your surname for everybody so that my brain can take a break. Okay, your recommendation of the week, Carls.
I didn't do my recommendation. Sorry, I was skipping ahead. I'm like, so if we were your best friend, I'm like, no, go backwards, Carly. So the book, I'm reading a book at the moment called A Man Called Ove, and it's really, really good.
About this.
Yeah. So I actually went into the Chat 10 Looks 3 group, which is the Facebook group of Annabelle Crabb and Lee Sales. They're fantastic. They have a podcast I listen to as well called Chat 10 Looks 3. They're brilliant. And that group is the best place to go for book recommendations. Mm-hmm. They're just out of this world because the whole thing is about like they just read a lot of books. And so it's a really good place to go. And I went in and said, I really enjoyed Eleanor Oliphant. Oliphant is Perfectly Fine, which is another really great book. If you haven't read that, I really, really enjoyed it. A lot of people didn't, but I really, really liked
it. Loved it. It was just such a great character.
She was wonderful. And it was just like, I also really enjoy, it's also similar to the Rosie Project. Like there's a lot of books like just at quirky, the moment.
I love the celebration of quirky characters. Like
same. Yeah, and people who might function a little bit differently in social settings than, you know, would be sort of considered public appropriate, and getting this wonderful explanation as to why these people do what they do. And it's really lovely. I mean, you know, I used to work with kids with special needs, so that's not a lesson I need to learn, but I just think it's a really good thing for fiction to be going in that direction and to give us a really good understanding of why people do what they do and how there's actually really excellent explanations for most of the reasons why people do stuff.
Yeah, and just people's brains work differently, and instead of judging, just embrace them. And yeah, in both those books, embraces the character for who they are, and it's I think like I love the concept of, I always think like people who love you unconditionally for who you are and don't try to change you is like one of the greatest gifts. So whenever I find a book that is celebrating that message, I just love it. So A Man Called Ove, is that something similar, is it?
Very, very similar. So if you read Eleanor Oliphant Is Completely Fine or Perfectly Fine, whichever one it's called, and The Rosie Project, you will really like A Man Called Ove. It's very similar. It's easy and sweet. It's sad because, you know, books just are most of it.
I won't say why.
but I'm really, really enjoying it. And it's a really lovely, easy read before bed. So yeah, that's my recommendation of the week. I'll move on to if we were your best friend. Sorry, I wrote that like in the wrong person. And I was like, what? So this comes from Jessamine. So this question wasn't actually asked of us. It was asked of me.
Yeah.
Smaggle. I don't even know, because this was actually like a public comment on a blog post of mine. And so I changed the name and I was like, well, if you published it publicly, then I can definitely use it. It was just really interesting because it kind of, because I actually contacted this person and they don't seem to be very contactable. So, but yeah, it was an interesting question that I thought needed, was useful to put on Straight and Curly. So Jessamine says, I'm 34 and in a newish relationship with a guy. He's lovely, very kind, affectionate. I always know where I stand with him. I'm finding it a really big turnoff. I've always been attracted to bad boys and being treated well should be the ultimate goal, but for some reason it's just not working for me. He wants me to move in with him. Do I go for it and risk hurting him down the track when I have to end it, or try really hard to embrace this style of relationship?
Cool. You go first.
Yeah. So my thoughts on this was that, like, it's a doozy of a question. And it actually reminds me recently, a mate of mine, like, asked me to set her up with someone. I'm actually a pretty decent matchmaker for those of you that didn't know. and she said, I like guys who are a bit asshole-y. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? Like, that's the weirdest shit I've ever heard. But then I kind of remembered that that was really a whole thing, particularly when I was in high school. So girls were constantly breaking up with guys because they were too nice. And I'll get to, you know, the direct problem in a moment. But the whole concept of men being too nice is just unbelievably damaging, and it really needs to stop being a prerequisite for relationships. So we don't need to tell men to be more asshole-y or to tell nice guys that they aren't a turn on. So I actually just think, like, I just went next level on this. It just really, like, hit a nerve with me. So we need to stop talking about that. Like, guys being too nice is never a problem. So we don't need to say that. And secondly, I'm going to go all Kelly on this situation and maybe recommend some therapy. I really don't mean that to sound condescending, but if being treated well doesn't make you feel good, then there has to be some issues that need to be sorted out there. In any case, I don't think it's a good idea to force yourself to stay with this guy if it doesn't feel right. But please, 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 if you break up with him, and this goes for everyone, never ever tell him or anyone else that it was because he was too nice, because that is not a message that needs to be spread. It's a very, very bad message. And also, as the long-term partner of a guy that's too nice, I can tell you it is absolute bliss. Like, he treats me like a queen, and it is the hottest thing in the world. Like, it is such a turn on. Being adored is amazing. And if someone wants to adore you, maybe let them. And if you have issues with letting people adore you, get therapy and get that sorted out, because it's just, yeah, going after, trying to find a guy who's asshole-y enough for you, that needs to be sorted out. Like, that's just not, that can't be a thing. And I think the solution to this is just to find a way to be comfortable with being loved, which I know is a very difficult thing for some people, but it's definitely worth working on. And, there's no such thing as a guy that's too nice.
Yeah, I have to admit, I read this question and I was like, whoa. So I know this is my, you know me too well, and I know we only have a small amount of information to work with here, but my first response was, I kind of feel this person owes it to herself and to this guy to go to therapy and just dig a bit deeper into why it is that being treated well is not working for her. It's totally possible that this guy is a total sweetie, but there's no spark for her
which
with
is
him.
Fine.
Yeah, and that's totally okay because, yeah, I know pre-Aunt, I went out with a few super, super nice guys who, you know, they ticked all the right boxes, but I just did not feel anything from them. So, you know, and it's something I always do. I'm always quite curious about, like, why is it that I can have, like, you know, a genuine spark with this person and, you know, not with this person when, you know, all things being equal, they're both really lovely people who are going to treat me well. But, yes, yeah, so that's an aside. But it's something I always think about, like, what is it that creates a spark between two people? But I do really, really think it's important that Jessamine explores the comment, I've always been attracted to bad boys, because I think it's something that she needs to have some self-understanding and self-awareness around. And again, like you said, I don't understand that. I don't mean that to sound condescending, but I just see that this is going to affect all future relationships going forward. So needs to be like, just get that sorted out, because if you have an understanding of what it is that makes you think like that, then you can adjust and you might then be able to go, oh no, actually, I really do like this guy. I'm just not comfortable with treating so well, or I don't, you know, he's lovely and I don't like him, but at least, you know, I'm open just to meeting other nice guys rather than just keeping an eye out for the assholes, because I just don't feel like assholes make good boyfriend or partner material. So, yeah.
They really, really don't. And I do understand that a lot of women are uncomfortable with affection and feeling loved because they've been in either physically or emotionally abusive relationships. That's what we're talking about when we talk about therapy. If there's issues involving the way you've been treated in the past, get that sorted out, because you deserve a nice guy more than anyone.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so this week's topic of the week is around maintaining good mental health and self-care. So this was something a few people asked about in the group, like what are the things we do to keep on top of our mental health. So I guess there's a quick background. Carly, you're pretty stable from a mental health point of view.
I am, yes.
You don't suffer anxiety or depression.
Oh, I do. I do get anxiety, but it's very high functioning anxiety. So, but I don't have a history with depression or anything like that, no.
Yeah. So, whereas I do have a history with depression and quite debilitating anxiety. So that's where we're coming from with the things that we say today. So you're kind of – the first thing we're going to talk about is just finding the non-negotiables that, you know, contribute you to you feeling good on a daily basis. So kind of what are your non-negotiables, Carl?
So for me, non-negotiables are – I figured these out a couple of years ago when I looked at times in my life when I was really on my game and feeling my best and all of the things that I was doing on a daily basis that was contributing to that. So for me, it's exercise. I must exercise every day. Even if I don't go to the gym, I need to go for a walk. I need to move, or otherwise I go to a very dark place in my head. I also need to be alcohol-free during the week. I mean, I'm obviously alcohol-free right now, but – even like before I was pregnant, I would be alcohol free from Monday to Friday and, you know, not drinking excessively on the weekend, because alcohol definitely does mess with my head. And also writing positive pages has been a big thing for me. So if I find myself feeling unmotivated or I'm having weeks where I'm not achieving the way I want to be achieving, waking up in the morning and writing a page of positive thoughts, like, I am capable, I am confident, I'm smart, I deserve this, all of that kind of stuff, just to keep my head in a really positive place when I start the day, just makes the biggest difference.
Yeah, definitely agree with those. Mine are quite similar, but also my big thing is that I'm very addicted to people telling me I've done something better than anyone else and that I'm amazing. It's really bad addiction to have. And it's very important. So for a very, very long time, I had a habit of over-promising and then over-delivering. As you can imagine, that's quite unsustainable. Like, it does give the desired effect of people telling you, wow, that's amazing. No one has ever done that as well as you.
But you don't want to kill yourself to get to that point.
Yeah. And so I had to get used to people just going, oh, thanks very much. You've done a good job, Kelly. and draw some, affirmation from that and not have to seek that higher level of amazingness all the time. So a lot of my non-negotiables are around keeping a lid on that and staying on top of overwhelm and being careful about the promises that I make. But aside from that, which is just a constant and ongoing dialogue in my head and a constant battle, my daily non-negotiables are the time to myself. So it's why I get up so early, mainly because I just need that time to myself in the morning so desperately. And then, yeah, and that allows me to also get in some exercise, and it also allows me to do some writing every day. And then I also just make sure to have that my days have white space in them, which is moments in the day where I can move slowly. So like I've got an hour to do jobs, you know, it might just be doing chores, but I've got an hour to do chores that I could really do in like 20 minutes if I've pushed hard, but I give myself an hour to do it. And those go slow moments in the day just provide little buffers in my day from, you know, otherwise I get into frantic mode very, very easily. And just from, for me, stress triggers anxiety and anxiety triggers depression. And that's kind of my little cascade of things. So if I can keep a lid on my stress levels, generally speaking, anxiety is well managed and I don't tip over into depression. So that's kind of what's always front of my mind. Yeah,
so number two is understanding that sometimes the shit hits the fan and you have to weather the storm.
Yeah, so this this is something that I have to do, but it's not, I'm not good at it because I'm a control freak. This is like going to be a therapy session for me. Are you ready for this, Kelly?
Yes, I'm here. I'm listening to you, Kelly. I'm ready. Go.
So sorry. So yeah,
I actually have a tissue shoved well into my nose right now to stop it dripping in the middle of this, so I'm not like sniffing all over you guys. So if I can just give you that lovely, attractive visual there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, so. You know, understanding or accepting that the shit's going to hit the fan and you just have to deal with it. Like, this is not something I'm good at because, you know, whenever the shit hits the fan, I immediately go looking for ways that, you know, the situation could have been avoided. Like, what could I have done for that not to happen? And usually it involves me, like, you know, being able to see into the future, which of course isn't possible, but I still try to do it anyway. So a lot of the work I've done in recent years is learning to accept that I cannot control life into being perfect. There is no life that's perfect. Life keeps showing me over and over again that no matter what I do to control it, life is just going to happen. And yeah, so a lot of the work I've done is around accepting things when they happen and just sitting with them rather than trying to make them go away or trying to think what I could have done better to avoid it. Like, just accept that shit happens basically and sit with it rather than, you know, trying to figure out what I could have done to stop it happening. So yeah, obviously I'm not there. I'm a long way from there, but I'm working on it and I'm aware of it. And I think that's another big thing in managing and maintaining good mental health is just having awareness around kind of your things, the things that you tend to do, and catching yourself out doing it and coming back to the moment and managing it in the moment. So yes. Do you have a problem with that one, Carl?
No, I don't actually. I'm the opposite. So I thrive when I'm out of control and things are busy. Like if I'm booked up every second for the next 7 days, I'm thrilled. I don't cope very well with holidays. I've never been very good at those. So I actually have to do the opposite. I have to talk myself into taking time off and, you know, chilling out and having proper holidays and stuff. And the reason why I'm able to do this is because I'll be like, so January, I hate January. January is the worst because everyone's away from their desks. They're off holidaying and doing things. And I'm just sitting there going, guys, come on, we've got work to do.
Give me some work. I'm like, Lisa, yeah. At school.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's the thing. And I'm able to cope better in those down times, by knowing that in every year there's kind of a wave of activity and I'll have a few months that are really busy and then it'll dip back down again and it'll be quite slow, then a few months that are busy again. And, so it's kind of just knowing that my trigger is not being busy enough and knowing that again, I will soon be very busy.
So how do you deal with uncertainty? Because, we'll talk about triggers now because, you just mentioned that. But yeah, so for me, a big trigger is uncertainty. And
yeah.
again, that's something I'm having to learn to try and sit with rather than trying to control it out of my life. So how do you go with uncertainty?
So one of the things that with uncertainty, I'm very into data and I'm very into looking at the past and using those indicators to predict the future. So if I have a client that all of a sudden decides they don't want to work with me anymore, I'll panic and that will send me into a spiral. But then I just have to remind myself that I've been freelancing for 5 years. I've always been able to pay my rent. I've always been able to replace a client quite quickly. I've been able to get more work if I want more work. I have an excellent history of clients that I've worked with that are more than happy to recommend me to other clients. So I know that based on the last 5 years of data I have about that, that everything's going to be fine.
Yeah, I like that one. Yeah, cool.
Because it's practical. You can't argue with yourself over that. You can't go, oh, but I'm shit, I'm the worst, everything sucks, my world's going to implode. You just look at what has happened and then apply that to the next 5 years and go, well, there's no reason why that shouldn't happen because I've got such a solid background of that working out.
Yeah. So kind of like, yeah, when it comes to your – so what does trigger stress or anxiety, anxious feelings for you other than slow, not enough work, as in – it being quiet and not your every second not being booked up?
That's a lot of, most of my anxiety comes from, professional uncertainty. Also just in general, like being a person who is, I write on the internet, I have a podcast, I'm doing more video stuff, that kind of thing. I do have like anxiety most days. I kind of feel like everyone hates me and I'm just kind of like really annoying to everyone. So there is that. So I have to kind of like talk myself out of that quite a lot. But yeah, that's all in my head. That's just stupid. If people don't like me, they're not going to follow me. So
yeah, that's kind true.
Of just sorts that out.
Yeah. So yeah, I definitely think that knowing your triggers on allows you to manage things better. So I think the important thing is to, and this is what I tried to do for a long time, is just eradicate all uncertainty, eradicate all bad things from my life. And I have
how'd that work out for you, Kelly?
Really
seems
well.
Super achievable, guys. If you're anxious, just eradicate all the bad things from your life. advice from Kelly today. I'm sure you're going to explain yourself, but that just sounded hilarious. It's like, I just got rid of all the bad things in my life and now I'm great.
Yeah, until the next bad thing happens and you're so angry at yourself for not seeing it coming. So now I know my triggers. So there's certain things that like just do send me into a spiral. So things like conflict and things and financial uncertainty. So I manage financial uncertainty probably in not the healthiest way. I manage it by just working really, really hard and building up big buffers.
Same.
And as long as I have my buffers, I'm sweet. And, my therapist will say she would rather I work hard on sitting with the uncertainty, but I found it easier to just manage it away. Look, small steps, people, small steps. And so far as conflict, I manage that by trying to be really clear in my communications with people, but also accepting that sometimes misunderstandings happen. And, you know, I just, in those circumstances, I rely on my skills as a writer to explain myself as clearly as I can. So I find I can manage a lot of conflict by simply being a good writer, but I can't manage it all the way. But yeah, so one of the things that, you know, we've mentioned is getting additional help sooner rather than later in the form of medication and therapy. So everyone knows I'm a huge advocate for therapy, and I know I talk about it in a quite of an offhand way, but I do that because I'm trying to make it sound like it's the most normal thing in the world to get therapy, because a lot of us have massive hang-ups about it. But I just do want to acknowledge this, like therapy is hard. And probably the hardest thing about therapy is that when you're at the point where you most need it, you're really, really exhausted, especially like if you've got depression. Depression is exhausting. Like you're exhausted all the time. You have no energy. And so the thought of going and talking to someone that you don't know and telling them what's going on in your life is really, really tiring and almost too much to ask a person, but you kind of have to find a way to do it because, you know, you can't do it yourself. Like you can't, I think the other thing a lot of us try to do is we try to rationalize away anxiety and we try to rationalize away depression by going, oh, you know, you've got a good life. So, you know, you shouldn't feel like this, you know, you should be happy for what you have. And we try to rationalize it like it's a rational thing and it's not a rational thing. It's a chemical thing. So using medication, I find takes the top edge off of it and allows you to function and go and get the help that you need. And then once you're getting the help that you need and putting in place the management strategies that the therapist has helped you with, usually you can then back off your medication slowly. But yeah, short term, quite often it's very hard to muster up the energy and the, you know, the wherewithal that you need to go and see that person without a little bit of extra help. So yeah, the short answer is therapy is hard and doesn't matter how much of an advocate of it you are. I remember the first time I went to see a therapist and sitting there in my car, in the car park, and it took every ounce of everything I had because my brain was screaming, get out of here. And I still to this day don't actually know how I managed to get inside that their clinic and actually go through with the whole thing, but I did, and you know, it was the best thing that I ever did. So I've had this conversation with a lot of people and I've had a lot of people say to me, thank you for saying it was hard, because when it was hard for me, that made it easier for me to push through with it. So that's, I guess, why I'm laboring that point a little bit.
No, I think that's a really important message to get out there, because I've, you know, I listened to quite a few. Actually, I'm going to mention My Favorite Murder again. I know I mention them a lot because I love them. But it is a true crime podcast and they do talk about murder. But both of the women who are the hosts of that show are very mental health positive, very therapy positive, very medication positive. They talk about a lot of their own mental health issues and how important it is to be healthy mentally, and how also sometimes you just can't be healthy mentally and sometimes you need to fall into a heap, and that's fine as well. So yeah, it's definitely mental health is really hard. It's a hard topic for us to talk about, particularly in a non kind of divisive way and also in an inclusive way. And it's kind of, it's also really hard to give people the advice to seek help when sometimes, as you were saying, you actually just can't. Like sometimes you don't have the energy to do that. And so I definitely want to acknowledge that in us saying, you know, get medication and get therapy. And sometimes you're so far into it that you can't. It's important to try. Get whatever
help you can. Yeah. Like even if it's like, you know, if someone makes you a meal once a week, or if, you know, someone offers to take your kids for the afternoon, like little things like that, like take them, you know, because yeah, I think that a lot of us dig ourselves into a hole by feeling like we have to be so, so capable all the time. And people will see that we're struggling and they will offer us help and they'll reach out and we will rebuff them because we feel like, no, I've got to maintain this facade. And I think sometimes just getting that tiny little break, like where someone takes your kids for an hour, might be just what you need and will give you the boost you need to take whatever the next step is and whatever the next step is. So it doesn't have to be big steps and it doesn't have to be crazy steps. It just can be just tiny little things each day, and they build into something. So yeah.
And that actually brings us to our last conversation point, which is prioritizing yourself. So things like saying no to engagements and that kind of stuff and letting go of any of the guilt associated with that. That's a really hard one for a lot of people, particularly parents. I know that's a really big thing. Prioritizing yourself is so low on your list of things to do yeah, in the day. Like when you're trying to get your kids off to school and trying to feed them, and you know, you've got to do your work as well and stay on top of their housework and you've got so much stuff to do. Prioritizing yourself and being compassionate with yourself is definitely something that's you kind of give yourself 10 minutes before you go to bed to check Facebook.
Yeah.
But it's so, yeah. so important. Like it's just so unbelievably important. And I actually think that this is one of the reasons why I do have quite good mental health is that I've actually always been very, very good at prioritizing myself. Like I know I'm laughing, but
Well, I know because that's the thing. Like you laugh nervously because it's like, oh my God, I can't believe I actually do that. Because it feels selfish, doesn't it? It feels like if you are looking after yourself or making decisions that are in your best interest – It seems so selfish, and we need to change our thinking because we do judge people when they do it. Like
absolutely.
My first reaction is when someone does something like that, I judge them, and then I have to catch myself and go, "Hang on a minute, this person is making the very sound decision to prioritize their own mental health. That's a good thing." But it's so conditioned into us from a societal point of view that, you know, to put others first and to think about others, and that, yeah, we really struggle with the whole concept of looking after ourselves first. You know, we can talk about the oxygen mask analogy till the cows come home. Nobody cares about that analogy. Like it does not get through. So the thing that I think someone needs to do is make self-compassion cool. So Dr. Kristen Neff is someone who has written a lot on the topic of self-compassion, but you know, someone needs to Gretchen Rubin self-compassion.
Yeah.
Because it's so crucial. I also,
maybe that's my calling. That's my book there, Kelly.
Yeah. Ooh, let's talk.
Maybe that's it. We just nailed it.
Because it's
how to be a selfish bitch and love it.
But you know, all self-compassion is like, if you have a problem, imagine like your best friend had the same problem. What would you say to her? Like what kind of kindness and compassion would you expect, extend to your best friend? Now extend that same kindness and compassion to yourself. There you go. Why can't we do that? And that's, you know, the question around self-compassion. It's not a hard thing. Well, we just can't do it.
This thing popped up for me in a podcast I listened to the other day, the Yumi Stein's one, Ladies We Need to Talk, which is a fabulous podcast. Yeah. Everyone should listen to it. It's great. But there was a whole thing about – because they cover topics like they do more kind of relationship-y sort of things, and there was a topic that they were talking about like resentment in marriage or something, or why marriages end. And a lot of it comes from women end up resenting their husbands because they suffer in silence a lot. And someone mentioned this thing called the burnt chop something or other. Yeah. And it's how if mum's cooking dinner and she burns one of the chops, she gives herself the burnt chop.
Yeah.
And she keeps doing this night after night. No one notices that she's given herself the burnt chop. And she sits there going, well, I'm eating the burnt chop and you don't have a burnt chop and I'm making a sacrifice and you're not even noticing my sacrifice. And I was just listening to this thing and I was just thinking, if I burn a thing, if I'm cooking dinner and I burn a thing, like if I burn a sausage, Ben and I go halves in the burnt sausage. Like that's just always been the way it's been. I'm like, ah, oh, I burnt a sausage. And he's like, cut it in half. And so we'll cut it in half and we'll both have. Like it just never would occur. Because I'm already
cooking dinner.
See, I would
totally eat the burnt chop myself and not tell anybody, but I like your approach. Just
yeah, like fuck that shit. Like
chop and make someone damn well share it with you.
Yeah, exactly.
Tiny little mindset shifts like that, isn't it? So.
Yeah, but I was actually quite shocked that there was a discussion group about it where people like, oh my God, I do this all the time. I'm like, I totally missed the memo on that. I'm there kind of like equally distributing my mistake around the family. I'm like, soz guys, I burnt one chop. We're all getting a bit of burnt chop today. And everyone else is just like, no, I shall eat the burnt chop. I will not punish my family for my terrible, terrible cooking skills. And I'm just like, you guys are chumps. So that's like, I clearly am wired quite differently. But I think that was a really good analogy in that why should you have the burnt chop? Like, and that helps you be in a healthier place, because I would resent Ben if I constantly ate the shit thing and gave him the good thing and he didn't even notice I was doing it. And why would he notice?
Exactly. And that's exactly the thing. Like, how would he even notice? It's not like you're waving the burnt chop in his face and then going, I'm now going to eat this, you know, because who would do that? So,
yeah.
We need to.
Oh, my mother would. My mother would let you know that she had the burnt one. She'd be like, oh, there's a burnt one and I'm having it. Don't worry. I'll have the burnt chop. I burnt it. I'll eat it. Guys, don't you worry. I'll do it.
This can be one of those topics, like, so it's time to wrap up the topic of the day, but then how do we go on to, like, kicked ass?
I know. And I'm also like, I'm just increasingly getting snottier and snottier as this episode goes on. So sorry, damn guys, if cold. I'm sounding like I'm drowning. So we'll move on to kicked ass. Kelly?
Okay. So I, mine is short and sweet. I got the loveliest video testimonial today from a client, or a client from last year. Took you long enough, Kate, but thanks anyway. No, joking. Anyway, Kate sent me the loveliest video testimonial. I am so, so grateful, and it made me feel very good about myself, and it was well timed. So thanks, Kate.
That's so nice. I love video testimonials because they're just, they're like, someone's talking about you behind your back, but you're overhearing it.
But you get to see it, yeah.
So my kicked ass is maintaining my fitness while pregnant. So I'm only in my second trimester, but I've done all the research and spoken to my doctor, and the guy who owns the F45 where I work out is totally on board, and everything's going really, really well. I'm still managing to go 3 to 4 times a week and just sort of modifying what needs modifying. But I'm just really proud that in winter, with low energy in general and obviously growing a human at the same time, I wasn't sure how that was going to go. Like, I wasn't sure if I'd be well enough or feel up to it, but I'm feeling fine, and I'm just feeling so much better being able to still go to the gym and have it take care of my mental health the way that it does. And it's, I just feel like it's a real achievement when a lot of the time I just want to sit down. Which I'm sure has more to do with winter than anything else. But there's also this amazing lady at my gym who she's about to pop, man. Like, she'd be 34 weeks. Like, she's very, very pregnant. And she's a complete gun. So just watching her modifying everything, but still going like as hard as she can to maintain her fitness has been really inspiring. So I'm very pleased thus far with my fitness pregnancy journey.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I was always so impressed with people who would do CrossFit and they're like literally, yeah, about to pop any second. And I'm like, well, I don't know if I could have done that, but you guys are amazing. Okay, so Kicked Our Ass is I'm trying really, really hard to work on my fifth book, and I'm finding it really hard to practice some of the things that I'm preaching to my book clients. I feel like a bit of a hypocrite. Like, I know what the problem is, but I don't know. I just don't seem to be able to get past it. So I'm working on that. I'm working on practicing what I preach and not being a hypocrite. So yeah.
Yeah, that's a hard one sometimes. Like, cause you say something and then people hold you to it. Like, yeah. I'm trying really hard to reduce my waist. And sometimes people are just kind of like, but aren't you zero waste? I'm like, no, I've never been zero waste. I try very hard to cut down on waste, but no, I'm not like walking to a farmer's market and, you know, buying potatoes fresh out of the ground because it's not realistic for me and where I live and how I function in the world. So sorry, I do buy frozen vegetables because sometimes that's all I have. So yeah, I get what you mean when you say a thing and people are like, but you said this, and when you're doing something else you feel like a complete fraud. So kicked my ass this week is just keeping my brain in creative mode. So sometimes it just leaves the building and I can't get it back. And I've mentioned this so many times, but I've got two amazing clients at the moment who I adore. And, one of them in particular lets me write in my own kind of funny, quippy style. But last week I just phoned it in. It was like, it's not normally a problem, but for some reason last week my brain was like, no, we're not being funny this week. And then I just like struggled all day, and then I felt terrible about what I was handing in. It turned out it was fine because it was of like course, she didn't need me to be particularly funny that day, but I was just like, oh my god, I'm usually so funny for this client, and now I'm just like, this is really boring. To be fair though, the topic was very boring. It was about like the legal stuff that you have to have on websites for the GDRC.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, yeah, so it was a bit about that. Yeah.
Unbelievably dry topic, but still I kind of felt like if it had hit me on a more creative day, I would have done a better job, but yeah.
Cool.
Sorry. And that just about wraps us up. So yeah, don't forget we've got a Patreon page, which is awesome, and it's helping us fund the podcast. So if you want to kick a couple of dollars our way, you can go to patreon.com/straightandcurly.
And yes, as always, jump into the Facebook group and share your thoughts about this week's show. I usually post like a picture as the show goes live so people can have all their conversation around the topic in that one place. So yeah, we look forward as always to seeing you in there. Bye. thank you so much for listening to Straight and Curly. This week's show notes and links will be available at straightandcurly.com.
And if you have any questions or weird self-improvement hacks you want us to trial, you can tweet us at Kelly Exeter or at Smaggle, or you can email us at hello@straightandcurly.com.